Hey, everybody, it's Ryan Ripley. Wanted to get a new offering in front of you as soon as possible, evidence-based leadership. And so as you all know, Todd Miller, myself, and Will Seeley, we're big on evidence-based management. We want to apply it to the leadership space. We all know that modern managers face complex challenges every day. You're juggling a lot of needs, your direct reports, your stakeholders, your customers, they all need constant attention. What we want to do is help you manage that. We want you to use information and data to make good decisions around all of these areas so that we're delivering the right thing at the right time for the right customer. And we know that we're doing that because we're using data and evidence to validate all the things that we're doing. And not only that, we're not just looking at value, but we're looking at our capabilities as an organization. Can we deliver on time? Can we innovate effectively? Do we have too much tech debt? Do we have too many things in process? Are we unable to deliver when the market demands that we do? We look at all of these things with evidence-based management. We merge that into a leadership mindset and lens, and we enable you to make new and better decisions repeatedly based off of the data that you're collecting within your organization. It's exciting stuff. We hope you can join us. Visit agileforhumans.com/EBL course. Join us in one of these offerings. We think you're going to love it. Hope you can join us. Use Agile for Humans, the number 4, to take another 15% off of this course, and we can't wait to see you there.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, we're back. Todd, it looks like number 6 in our Scrum is Hard and Disruptive series. Actually, let me tee this up. We're going through a white paper from 2006 that Ken wrote, 15 ways that Scrum is hard and disruptive. We wanted to take a look at it, analyze it, and see are these things still holding up and true? And we've released 5 of them so far. And Todd, I think they've all held up pretty well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we've gotten feedback like, wow, this stands the test of time, right?
It's like, yeah, it's not surprising. Ken's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
We're on to number 6. The iterative incremental nature of Scrum puts stress on the product development organization to improve its engineering skills and on the product management organization to optimize the return on investment of every release and project. The phrase "that can't be done here" really means that it will be very difficult to do so. The gap between current practices and target practices is a measure of incompetence and competitive risk.
Wow. Get ready for a long video.
Definitely a lot to pull apart here, right?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'm going to pull apart is this iterative incremental nature of Scrum puts stress on the product development organization to improve its engineering skills.
Yeah.
So considering how long ago this was written, right? Now is Scrum Guide 2020 has the commitment definition of done to the increment. So just that addition, officially recognizing definition of done as a commitment to the increment in Scrum, really improving engineering skills in and of himself right there. That's a container for it. But also being able to get to done in 30 days or less requires a different approach to engineering, right? It requires the use of toggling. It requires automated tests. It requires a lot of the things that we draw from XP, really, to improve engineering skills.
Yeah, I think it really highlights that technical excellence has never been an optional in Scrum, right? And in fact, what Ken is saying here is that the framework is intentionally putting pressure on the development organization or on a Scrum team or on developers to make sure their engineering skills are on point. You know, that means automated deployments, that means testing, that means, you know, all of the things that need to happen within a sprint. But what I love here too is that he balances this out. He's also saying that Scrum should put stress on the product management organization. You know, this quest for value, this return on, you know, return on investment, you could replace with the word value, right? And you would be equally right here that the pressure should be on the product management wing of or side of the equation that, look, ROI has got to be great. The juice has to be worth the squeeze each and every sprint. You know, every release, every project, every product, you know, we are pushing to ensure that the return is as much as possible. And I love that balance. We don't hear enough about that, you know, in the agile scrum product dev world that, hey, engineering should be a little stressed out. Product should be stressed, but it's a good stress.
Yeah.
Right. It's a pressure for excellence. It's not a pressure for a negative outcome. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, we have an accountability for that, right? Specifically to look at return on investment and to consider the when with releases, right? So, and that's the product owner. So there's a whole person that is just constantly thinking return on investment and optimizing return on investment. And then there's a group of people that are constantly thinking quality, engineering skills, advancing the iterative way that we build things, right? This is the developers. So really love this sentence. Holy smokes, it's really true still today.
Well, and then even the phrase "that can't be done here" really means that it will be difficult to do so. And this gap between current practices and target practices is a measure of incompetence and competitive risk. We have another accountability who is focused really on that gap. Right? The effectiveness of the scrum team is the core accountability for the scrum master. And this effectiveness, I think you could look at and say, you know, if there's a gap between current practices and target practices, that's an effectiveness gap. And it is, you know, a measure of incompetence and competitive risk. And I think scrum masters should take that to heart. You're not there to just facilitate the next fancy retro. You're there to close that gap.
Yeah.
Right. And that gap reduces competitive risk. It improves the ability of the engineering team, the engineers, and of the product management organizations to actually do what they need to do. And I think that's a huge thing that we should talk more about, that whole effectiveness gap. I think that's something that it should be on the forefront of every Scrum Master's radar. And I doubt most could even explain what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Two things that give me a visceral reaction as a scrum master: hearing "that can't be done here" and hearing "but that's the way we've always done it." Right. And then to fill in with this, this is really interesting perspective you've brought up, Ryan, between current practices and target practices, because current practices are where we are today. Target practices are where we want to be in the future. And there is a gap in there. That gap is something that a scrum master should constantly nudge towards, right? We should identify that gap and we should slowly chip away at it and remind people of it, because complacency can set in. But this is the way we're doing it now. Just because that's the way you're doing it now doesn't mean that's the best way. We should always be looking for a better way to do things, for a better way to practice things, from a better way to code, from a better way of understanding whether something was valuable or not. So that gap is something that a scrum master should monitor and make sure we're chipping away at.
Or remove the, and I should say, and remove the impediments that are preventing those level ups, right? There's a world of systemic impediments in every organization that a scrum master's got. Pop the scrum bubble, get in the org and remove the impediments that are preventing, you know, the gap from being reduced. I really think this is, this will be how scrum masters continue to thrive, in this post COVID, tech accelerated world, right? This is the more you can demonstrate that what you're doing is closing that gap between current and target practices, that effectiveness gap, the more you'll be valued in the organization. I think Ken was prophetic in 2006 when he wrote this. I think he even knew then that this would be, you know, where rubber meets road and where this is how we demonstrate value. So scrum masters, take this to heart. You've got a lot of work to do, and it's really about closing that effectiveness gap.
I like this one.
Yeah, I think this one's amazing. And that balance of pressure or of stress is another kind of neat thought that, I mean, everyone's really good at stressing IT. right? Short yeah. timelines, death marches, get it done, get it. I've got messages from a former colleague who's talking about reduced timelines, but they added more time for the product side to do UAT.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to take the, we're going to let the pressure out on one side, but turn it up on the other. And I, yeah, no, it should be both. Everyone should be looking at optimizing their accountabilities and their areas of concern. And yeah, I just, another great comment from Ken, from about 20 years ago, which is amazing.
Yeah. Still cool. Holds true.
What do you all think? That's what we're interested in. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss a video. Leave us your questions and comments in the, leave them below. We would love to hear. What are your thoughts on this statement? Are you getting a lot out of this series? How else can we help? All of those are great things. Be sure to share these videos with everyone you know that likes, loves, and uses Scrum. I think that could be helpful for them as well. Some videos are going to pop up. It's probably our Scrum 101 course. You should check that out. Easy way to get into the framework and learn about all these wonderful things that Ken is describing in this white paper. So for Todd, I'm Ryan. Go forward. Do some great Scrum things. Remember, Scrum is hard and disruptive, but that's a good thing. And we'll see you next time.
See you.
Hey, it's Ryan. If you're enjoying this show and want to take a deeper dive into Scrum with me and Todd, check out agileforhumans.com/training. Be sure to also look at the show notes to subscribe to our newsletter, get a copy of our book, Fixing Your Scrum, and learn more about working with us at Agile for Humans. Thanks for listening, and Scrum on!